Welcome to another episode of Love Notes. This is Taquita Love, a nurse and a comedian.
You think you could bring your brother the clear machine home? You know the revival.
And I'm talking to my funny friends about medical mishaps.
Clear!
You are listening to Love Notes.
What's up, y'all? It's Mason Pryor. You're tuned in to Love Notes by Taquita Love.
Thanks.
Tried to do my LL Cool J voice on the bar.
Yeah, you put the octave like.
I don't know.
I forgot to hit record.
Right, so we can. Yeah. So what this is, you don't do it live. You pre-edit and then stream it.
Yeah, I just do it. I do the audio only because it's easier to do, especially during the pandemic when you're not really out in the streets.
Yeah.
Damn, my hair not done. That's
quit playing. I am not my hair India Ivory.
That's why I'm audio only. I'm like, I got to get myself together first before, you know, and I'll be scared to go places because of the whole COVID thing.
Right. It's like the TikTok. I would have went them in the COVID.
You know, brothers, y'all could have the 5 o'clock shadow. Y'all could show up and, you know, be good. For us, if I have a mustache too, it all look good.
That's funny to create a complaint.
People always ask, how come you don't do the video? We doing Zoom?
Yeah, but you know, you don't have to with a podcast. You already know that. You could have did it either way. But you need to keep that sound bite because that was funny.
What? My mustache grew in and I was like, I can't get on the screen. You can't cover it up. People see it.
Yeah, what do they call that? The little makeup, the concealer?
Yeah, I tried that, Mason. I tried to see. I'll be tweezing my eyebrows, tweezing the mustache.
Oh, see, if it's tweezable thick, it's not going to work. Concealer works if you got the little baby peach fuzz. But if you got straight up follicles, oh no, it's over.
Right. This is where we at. I'm just like rolling with the punches because I go crazy.
My mama did hair. I don't really trip off of the hair thing because my mom told me too, because the type of woman I like certain women with a certain like hair. So she always said women with like long hair is because they have a very thick follicle. So be ready for like back hair, shoulder hair, facial hair, like just what hair is hair. If you like women with a lot of hair, this is what it's going to be. So I've definitely gotten used to it. You know what I mean? It's just for a woman, you just got to keep your hands done. Like not even like full done, nails done, go to the nail salon, but just keep your nails at least done.
Yeah. Like at least they clean.
No, not clean, done. Like keep your nails. Like I know that's weird, you know, but I'm like that. Like it's not even the whole thing with the Cat Williams thing. You know, you got plum and, you know, peach, but legit, like, I just feel like women supposed to just have, they're not supposed to have their nails like not done. Yeah.
I agree, but you know.
But a little mush, please. Quit playing with me. Come give me that kiss. Oh.
Way back.
That ain't bothering me at all.
If your girl kiss tickle your mustache, you know it's going to be an issue.
We're going to be a circus show. I'm telling you right now, we're going to be the hairy faced couple. I don't care.
Oh my God.
That don't bother me at all.
This is Love Notes, the show where I, a comedian and a nurse, talk to some of my funny friends about our journeys in comedy as well as some medical mishaps. I met him at the Comedy Store in Los Angeles, and his father's name is on the wall, Richard Pryor. So y'all welcome Mason Pryor to Love Notes. What was your journey like to become a comedian? Because I know that you graduated high school. And then from that point, you started comedy.
Yeah, I started comedy, what was it, my first year of college? And actually why I left college was because I wanted to be a comedian, actor, and a writer.
So that was always your dream?
Before I got to college, I thought I was going to be a professional athlete. And then after my first year of football, I made the team. But after seeing the talent gap, and it let me know that I need a new career.
Okay, when you say the talent gap, was you getting banged up or you just wasn't, you weren't cut for football? What do you mean?
Oh no,
that?
I not at all. It's not even, you know, the ow that hurts, you know. Football is football. If you can make a college team, you got some, you know, intangibles. It's just when you're running your 40 time and you're the fast kid at your high school, then you go to college and you're getting outrun by defensive linemen. It's time to hang them up, mm-hmm. you know, especially when you hang your hat on speed.
That's one of the normal transitions when people go from high school to college, because you can be the best at high school. And then when you get to college, it's like everybody's the best.
Honey, it was the same way with the comedy. I was doing open mics.
Exactly.
Richard Pryor's son. It's only 5-minute routines. And first 3.5 minutes is just, oh, that's Richard's son and talking about that. Then they threw me up on that Apollo. It's time to go be a real professional. A talent gap is a motherfucker.
Names can get you very far, but when you on stage, you there by yourself. Like, you know, it's, you know, like, you have to deliver.
Exactly.
How has that been for you in your journey as a comedian?
To be honest, it's been hit or miss. Now that I did the Apollo, I spoke with a couple of comedians like Eddie Griffin, things like that. And they told me there were some missing pieces in me as a person, not just on stage. When I was younger, it was a writing formula issue. You know, how do I say it like this? Or maybe if I tweak a joke like that. When I realized watching Mr. Griffin, when I worked for him for 2 years, and even now still on like an apprenticeship and I promote for him, I've seen how he can take something from something like a joke, and it's more so perspective. He doesn't change who he is to conform for a joke. He just realizes it's how you deliver to the audience. There's certain, you know, energies with comedy. It's similar to like if you play in the NFL and you have a system you like to play in, and then you go to a new team. Even though you're no less than the athlete you may have been that year before, if you don't have that formula right with that system, you're going to have to adapt. And open mic comedy yeah. with that audience of comedians versus an audience in a theater looking at me, knowing who my dad is and expecting my father. This is the first time I ever experienced something like that at that magnitude. You're talking about the Apollo Theater in Harlem. That's an enormous stage.
Right. And so, I mean, I feel like there's big shoes to fill, and it's just because you were born into, you know.
Call it what it is, that nigga's face. I have his face.
I know that it had to be challenging, but like, how do you own that? Because I know that I feel like you just own it and work with it in your comedy.
That's what I want. Come on now. Mm-hmm. If I'm going to chase a pipe dream, why wouldn't I chase the pipe of pipe dreams? If I'm going to go treasure hunting, I'm going for Atlantis. You know, I could have went back to college. Even yeah. now, I still have active eligibility. I could go for a pipe dream and say I'm going to be a college athlete. But if I can look in that mirror every day and know I have that face, why wouldn't I dedicate everything mm-hmm. of my life force and energy? If it's not stand-up comedy, maybe the Lord just had me doing comedy just to meet the people in the industry, learn and understand what it is, and then play that later. Like, that would be an honor beyond any other manager if I could get an opportunity to audition to play my father in a movie.
Oh, yeah. Oh, who would be better than you?
Oh, I'm sure there are plenty of people that are better. I'm not trying to compete with being, you know, something else. I would say who would look better than me as Richard Pryor is where I would stand my claim on.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I know there's better talent. But those same talents would tell you when I started, I wasn't who I was. And I just had the fortitude to go for it. That's why I changed my name on Instagram. Wins Oscar mm-hmm. for role of Richard Pryor.
Yeah, I noticed that. And
I want those people out there that are having that power and doing those things. Yeah, I want them to know this is what I want. Because if you don't tell the universe what you want, you'll be over there. The universe will give you just anything.
You better preach. Now, I know you had preaching in your blood, but you preaching now. Like, because that is the truth.
You know we're here, the Godfather. That's Richard Pryor's boy.
You better give the word.
The Lord told me, nigga.
We got to speak some of the stuff that we want into existence. And I commend you for respecting the talent and the craft of stand-up to put the work in. Because... like you said, like you, I saw you at an open mic and I'm just like, what he doing here? He don't have to be here. You know, like he Richard Pryor's son. What has been like the highlight of your stand-up career so far?
Definitely working for Eddie Griffin at Vegas.
Okay. Why is that the highlight?
Oh, I mean, you know, the accolades of working with a talented comedian at that level, that's in itself... that right there is the it. But beyond that, personally, as a man growing up, the things that Eddie has instilled in me those intangibles are more important than anything else. What I've met a lot of celebrities, I've met a lot of comedians, and a lot of times just because, like we were talking, just because, oh, that's Richard Parson, yeah, I'm gonna say hi to that cat, you know? And that's why, you know, like you said, always been nice, always available, always there. I had the intangibles as a person, but without the life direction to know what a comedian is. And those are the things that, you know, when you meet and talk, the Dave Chappelle's when they pull you aside, you know, when you get the Eddie Griffins to bring you on the road, when you have Cat Williams to hang out with, you know, those type of people, they show you by example. You know, simple things like Chris Rock being at the Comedy Store. I saw him, he was just sitting there and he was just in the back hanging out, wasn't really talking to anybody, wasn't drinking, wasn't smoking. And he was looked like he was reading over some material he had just did. And I was too nervous to go up to Chris Rock and just, you know, tell him, hey, because to me, Chris Rock, to me, you know, everybody calls Michael Jordan the greatest of all time. Like, you know, I'm a LeBron guy. To me, I know that Richard Pryor is the greatest comedian of all time. 100%. But to me, Chris Rock is like, he's to me like a LeBron. Most well-rounded, very disrespected. No matter how great he does, mm-hmm. it just never seems to be enough. And so when I saw Chris, he just, mm-hmm. him being able to just, yeah, I am really Chris Rock. Like, it's not like, oh, my dad's Chris Rock. I am Chris Rock, and I'm here now with people being a person. It's not that hard. It's not that difficult. So there's nothing wrong with just going out there and doing it. And then I came to L.A. when Damon Wayans Jr. was out, and what am I going to say with that? He's out there doing it too, and his father's still alive. Their Wayans are still doing yeah. stuff. Content is still popping. And he's got to go into shows where he's like, oh, I just want to do comedy, and you have women throwing underwear on stage.
Oh, that still happened?
I don't know about anymore. As stage pandemics and stuff is different. But I know for a fact, I've been at the Haha Cafe, Damon's walk, Junior's walked in, and it was women busting it on site. On site.
Oh, okay.
He was a rock star coming up. That was, to me, the funny thing, because I came in, I did some shows, I had some events, I was making some money in L.A., and people said, you're really doing something. But when Damon Wayans shows up and you see the reaction from the audience, it let me know, oh, there's levels to this.
And when you saw that, yeah, because I, like I said, I met you in L.A., but then I think I may have knew you were in Vegas at some point, and I didn't, you know, and then all of a sudden you were just on the road.
Yeah, I went to Vegas after when we met. It's been some years now. Oh yeah.
That's why I was just like, you know, L.A. is pretty much shut down, but it's one of those things where it's like, you don't really hear much, you know, and then all of a sudden you pop back up and it'd be like, oh, that's what he's been doing. That's where he's been at. He's been Correct. Sharpening his tools. He's been on Fine. The road. He's been, you know, going yeah. through growing pains because yeah. that's what life is.
Amen.
It's not until, well, for me, it's not until like I had that one breakup that like, you know, that made me stay in the bed for a month. Then when I get on stage and talk about how horrible it was and what was funny about it, then it was like, you've been through something. So now you relate to people in a different way as opposed to things that don't necessarily connect to everybody. So do you feel like, you know, like you've had time to live
Oh, you're not going to ask me about dating relationship, are you? I am horrible with dating advice. I'm terrible.
But the thing is, you don't learn until you experience. That's the point I'm trying to make. It's kind of like you.
Yeah, I'm great at experiencing. Ooh.
I can't with you.
Out the box, it sounds great. Richard Pryor, son, resume be real clean. He used to play football. Cute, nice, handsome, travels the world. Be with me 2 weeks. You'd be like, this dude does not scrub his feet.
Okay. So, I mean, you human. We all human. What was the lowest moment of your stand-up career?
The lowest moment, when I used to take it really serious, I used to work with Barry Katz. He hired writers, and I was doing to the best of my ability. I had a sober, clean mind. This is before I even smoked weed. I really wasn't even drinking alcohol. And I gave comedy everything I had just to be told, he'll never be Richard Pryor. That was the most disappointing mm-hmm. reality. Everybody's had bad shows. Every great's had bad shows. That's not what's mm-hmm. going to define me on my bad moments. It's when you feel that you can go up there and deliver something with your best and you know you did a great show. You can go back on the record and see in the recording the laughs, count how hard the laugh applauses are and see the spikes, and then still have people walking out looking at you and judging you against someone that you'll never become. That to me was the hardest pill to swallow.
You know, it has to be hard for you because you will never, you know, like Richard Pryor is not.
Say it what it is. Back. I'll never be Richard Pryor.
I mean, having your father be who he is, that has to be just hard for you to keep going, knowing that you get told those things. What motivates you to keep going? Is it him?
Those are things I still definitely deal with day to day, because I get recognized even now, you know, from not even just doing shows and stuff. Like, people just walk up to me and be like, dude, you look like the guy Richard Pryor. So that's always going to be that. But again, go back to people that I used to know. Cat Williams. Remember his last comedy special he has done, not the pandemic one, but when he did his last performance, he had talked about when he walked on stage how difficult it was going to be competing against Cat Williams himself. When he left the game, he was the number one comedian of all time. And how does he come out of hiatus and compete against his own shadow? And how he had the balls to just go out there and do it. That to me is where, you know, I get that inspiration, because when I could meet Cat and see him, talk to him and see how he's such a mild-mannered person by nature, was funny to see how he could develop that character to become that performer. And that's what it is. You got to give the audience something. And life is rough. Life is intense. People are out here. They don't care about all this whole he say, she say, what I think about this person, you know, undeniability in the industry. People are out there at a bar, having a couple drinks, doing whatever they're doing in the bathrooms or outside on the porch, and they want to laugh. And if you're not resonating with that real genuine, you won't have it. Because there's plenty of comedians that had a better life than my father. There's plenty of people that had a better perspective than my father. But people didn't walk that life. Mm-hmm. And that's another reason why I know I'll never be. So that's why I'm not trying to compete anymore with
it. Life is life. And one thing that I learned as a comedian is to be true to myself and to be true to who I am. Like,
yes, ma'am.
If people will love me for who I am, or they will not like me for who I am, but you're going to get who I am. And I think that's the beauty of comedy. And that's just like the reality of
it. That and your penmanship. Because, you know, you came out here. You're not from L.A., are you?
I'm actually from Chicago. Yeah.
Yeah. See, I can tell. See, Chicago comedians, they, because it's, because I'm from the Midwest as well. I see how when y'all come, you guys are more prepared package, because you have to make it out of Chicago. So y'all's penmanship really resonates well. You look at a lot of comedians from Chicago, maybe some of their material, other people may not like it. A lot of times people say it's too intense, you know, too hardcore, but call it what it is. Y'all's penmanship is so on point, because a lot of comedians come out here to LA and then they go out to the, you know, with that, hey guys, what's up routine, you know, how's it going? Yeah, you know, they don't have material.
I'm from Chicago. I actually started in LA, but I had to go improve myself. Like, when I went to Chicago and did stand up for the first time, then, you know, I did Chicago Laugh Factory and literally had to hold my own. There is no sympathy for, like, low key. Like, there is no free passes. You could be cute, you could be sick, you could, you know, be half naked. But if you ain't making nobody laugh,
right?
Period. Like, if you can do that, they do not care. And I think the realism of cities like Chicago and New York, Atlanta too, I think when you perform there, like, you're forced to not, you know, to give it your all and to be real with people. People know when you're real. Yes, and ma'am. I think in LA, what I learned, because I started in LA, I learned, you know, the 3 to 5 minute, your hot five for industry, you know, industry. If they see you, what would your TV show be? What would your movie about your life?
But that doesn't always resonate, that quick 5 minute summary routine of this is who I am, nice to meet you stuff. But, you know, you take that show on the road, people don't care about your life perspective. They don't care how you feel or where you're from. You know, all that, like, you know, in LA, you come out there, you get 10 minutes of just applause for just showing up. You know, hey, how's it going? You know, I just did this the other day, and, you know, this in the news made me feel. They don't want that. Tell me something that makes me laugh. Period.
Mm-hmm. And how can you relate to them? And I'm going to be honest and say, even my family, when I first started, you know, just trying to get jokes down, and I did have like a, this is my showcase mentality. I did that in Chicago maybe once or twice and quickly snapped out of that. My own sister was like, I could have stayed in the house for that. Like, that's the type of honesty you get You know, coming from places like that where you know you gotta put your all in it.
Yeah. When you go do an Apollo show and you get people on Twitter talking about dad should have woke up out of the grave to beat my ass for that show, and you want to be mad, but it's funnier than the routine you did. You know what I'm saying? It is what it is. But iron sharpens iron, because you know, we can Miss Love, we can go do a show and Carla would think about the good shows, like not the bad shows when we're, you know, doing this show for $10, $15, $20. What about them shows where you get $5,000 for 10 minutes? Mm-hmm. What about when you up in them hotels and you're like, yo, this is a double suite and all I got to go is talk for 15 minutes. It's worth it. It's worth it. That's why a lot of these, like when Ed told me, he said, when that whole situation at the Apollo happened, he pulled me aside. He told me, you need to start diversifying yourself. You need to change your narrative. You need to change the way people view you. He told me to write. I wrote scripts. I started doing that. He told me I need to get a regular job. I had to get a regular job. He said, there's things in life that you need to experience. A lot of comedians, they don't really develop into comedy until they have their family, because they don't even understand real comedy because they ain't been through real pain yet.
Yes. That whole experience part is that's what make good comedy. And to go and talk about those type of things, then you connect with people. Then it's like, you know, the fact that I'm a nurse, and you know, when I say I'm a nurse, then, you know, I can connect with everybody, because for one, everybody need a nurse. Somebody experienced a nurse. Everybody know medical field. Amen. For two, maybe their father or their mother been in the hospital and now they get a different perspective on what it is like. Or I get people that want to be nurses. They'll be like, yo, you know, like, I know you, you know, like, how was the journey? How did you do it? So I think that, like, when you can appeal to people by being who you are in real life, then that just makes it a lot, you know, easier to digest, and that experience that you get.
Right. You over here drawing blood from somebody, telling people what's their diagnostics, over there having a whole face when you know something's wrong with a patient and you can't tell them till the doctor comes in. You know, there's a lot that you learn from that. That is for sure. My cousin's a nurse.
Yeah. Oh, for real? What type?
She should have been a doctor.
Oh, yeah. I get that all the time, too. Why you ain't do doctors?
That's because people, they don't understand how much education that is. Look, now this is about 4 or 5 years versus 12 to 13 years of college. That's why.
Exactly. So when I lost my grandmother to throat cancer and I saw how the doctors communicated with her and interacted with her in the hospital, they would tell her, you know, X, Y, and Z and leave. And then the nurse would come in and like brush her hair and clean her up. And when the nurses took care of her, she brightened up, like she came alive.
Yeah.
And it was a spiritual thing. And I was like, I want to do, you know, I want to make people feel the way my grandmother felt. That's the part of healing that I cling to. And it was like, I ain't trying to be in school for 12 years too. Right. That was too.
You notice how nurses stepped up with the pandemic situation.
Oh, we had no choice.
But think about it. Working them long shifts, because you know, all the medicine, taking the test, all that stuff. Mm-hmm. Doctors don't do that.
I mean, who else?
That's a nurse.
Yeah. And
you know, come on now.
No. I mean, I'm gonna take it. You pumping us up. I accept it.
So I'm always here to big people up. I think people are so amazing. Like, I don't get it. Like, it's pretty much is sports, video games, and chopping it up with people. I mean, ain't nothing much else to do. Like, I don't like the thrills of life, you know, all the hype that people give. I think I was spoiled as a kid because I lived in a situation where the city I was from was such a small, like, cowpoke town, Columbus. And it wasn't even Columbus, it was Pickerington. So being from, like, a really nice area, don't get me wrong, but people had money, but also right next door will be somebody with some cows. So it just made people have a certain type of energy. So when I see people and I hear experiences and stuff like that, and I can correlate it with something else, I'm always trying to attach that.
Yeah. Well, that's dope. Have you had any unexpected trips to the emergency room?
Ooh, like I didn't plan to go and something happened?
Like something forced you to go to the emergency room. Like something happened to you where you was like, I gotta go get help medically.
Oh, I fell off a skateboard as a kid.
And did you break anything?
Like 3 teeth in my face in the front.
Yeah, tell me about that.
I thought I was gonna be Tony Hawk as a kid. Yep. I was like 9, 10 years old. You know how you go in the hood and you be on the concrete and you be on a skateboard on your stomach? Remember the old skateboards? This isn't like these new skateboards that'll be longboards. It was like the old ones from like the Toys R Us, and it'd be like banana shaped, and they had the real thick like skater wheels on there. And you would just sit on your stomach and push. I was doing that. And in between the concrete was that tar that stuck up. And I hit that and slid right off the board, face planted, face first, right into the concrete. Cracked 3 teeth, busted the top lip, teeth went through the lip.
And
I took it like a G, though. I was only 8. I didn't cry. I didn't even bleed. You know what I'm saying?
How you gonna not bleed if your teeth poke through your
lip? Because I was a thug. Like, you know what I'm saying? I was a baby thing. I was a thug baby. You know what I'm saying? I said, man, I'm on my life, on my mama's, bro. If I drop one blood of blood, I ain't gonna never forgive myself. And the blood was like, suck it up, little dude. I ain't gonna let you fall. All
right, so y'all just learned Mason Pryor does not bleed. So
no one makes me bleed my own blood. Nobody. That's not what happened. I cried all the way to the hospital.
What happened in the hospital? Like, did you get a good nurse? Do you remember the experience?
Like, kind of. I was a kid. I really, like, when it comes to going to the doctor, like, I really, like, I mean, I'm trying to think, like, what's, like, a funny story being at the doctor? Okay, I get regularly checked up for STDs and AIDS, because you got to if you're sexually active. So every year, you got to go at least, I'd say, once a month to go get STD and then, you know, AIDS tested. So a lot of times when I go, it's not stressful or tense. It's just a checkup. So a lot of times I'll be in there and I'm in a more of a silly mood than other people. And I'll be in there with somebody. And I'm like, don't be like, you know, tapping a friend in front and be like, man, chill out, bro. Like, have some decorum. Like, I'm like, bro, this ain't me over here itching it up. Like, but outside of that, like, nah, like, for real, I don't. I've dated a couple people in the medical industry that had some crazy stories.
Oh, wow. What was it like dating some? Because a lot of my relationships don't last because of the stress of my job.
I would think it would be because of the amount of money you make.
Well, I mean, perceived. What's the perception of what we make?
Oh, it's hard when I work at Wendy's and I got $10 an hour and I come home and you over here making 3 times that and I'm trying to be the man of the house. That is not easy.
Okay, true that. Okay, that could be my downfall. And I'm not reneging on making nursing money. So
I'm the man of the house. Nigga, but I paid 3/4 of the utilities in this crib and all the rent. Well, I'm the man of the fridge.
Right. That's
you gotta pick and choose your spot.
That's how most of my relationships been. I mean, like, you know what? I got the food. I got all the food.
I ain't get none of the furniture, but that's my cable bill.
Oh, the government's cable.
Exactly.
Maybe take this EBT card and get whatever you want. And that's for me. Like, that's how dating be for me. You dating people in the medical field.
I dated a nurse. That's why I know exactly what you're talking about. And what's messed up, I thought I had money because I was doing comedy. So I'd do a show, come back with like $1,000. And she coming back with checks for $8,000-$9,000 a week. I'm like, man, what is it? Are you selling drugs out the hospital? But she got Dilaudid on the low. All I'm saying, and you don't make this type of money just taking temperatures all day.
I just think it's crazy. I mean, that's my world when it comes to dating. And people want me to, you know, hookups. Niggas be asking me for flu shots, and people ask me if I can get the hydroxychloroquine during this pandemic. I can't. I think, you know, it become it's an unequal balance, sure. And it's not a lot of men that's making that type of
right. If you really want to make some money, you know what you need to be selling? Them the allergy pens? The EpiPen, isn't that what
it is? EpiPen.
Yeah. If you ain't got insurance of things, how much of them things now? Like three, like a couple thousand or hundreds or something like that?
Yeah, and they save your life though. So it's kinda like you're not gonna not pay to save your life.
I'm like, just saying, give me like 1,000 of them things. I'm gonna go to the hood, just release a bunch of killer bees. And when I see somebody I'm like, you got that guap? You got that guap?
Before we go, Mason, do you got any home remedies? Like, is there anything you do to keep you away from getting sick?
Oh yeah, there's plenty of things I do now. You know, if you drink alkaline water, that helps with hangovers. Green drinks, it puts the energy, especially for people on the road and stuff like that. You know, you travel so much, people don't even take the consideration of flying, the amount of, you know, damage that does to your heart and your blood. And your heart is so important because life like a comedian, you're sitting down writing, you're standing up talking, you're not moving, and then you're flying around all the time eating unhealthy. So you need to keep, you know, your cardiovascular right, keep your heart right, put in those nutrients, the vegetables as much as possible. Stay off of drugs. I know it sounds easy, it sounds simple, but every night performers perform against a bunch of people that are bringing that mess. And for those people, that's that one night they did it. For the comedian, mm-hmm. that's every night, every show, there's a new person, there's a new drug, there's a new opportunity to do something. And you look up and you're like, man, I've done too much 4 times out of the week and it's only 7 days and I got 8 more shows next week.
Yeah.
Cut down on all the promiscuousness. STDs are real. Nobody wants that. Mm-hmm. Let me see, what else? Make sure you're listening on Love Notes by Jacquita Love, you feel me?